it's Thursday, the 2nd of July, and this is Israel in 10, the Misgav Daily Brief. I'm Laura Sellier in Tel Aviv. It's been 1,000 days since the October 7th attacks. Today's security analyst Yaakov Lapin tells me that Israel is safer to date by almost any metric, but only if it sticks to its new security doctrine. Don't try to deter terrorists. Just make it impossible for them to act. And that means remaining beyond Israel's borders in Syria, Gaza, and Lebanon. Hear more about that in a moment, but first, the headlines. Talks between the United States and Iran have been put on hold until after the funeral of the late Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khamenei. This week's indirect negotiations, mediated by Qatar and Pakistan, have focused solely on the Strait of Hormuz and on frozen Iranian funds. Iran says it has not agreed to allow UN inspectors to visit any of its nuclear sites. Despite the slow progress, the talks have sent oil prices to their lowest level since the start of the war. Syria's foreign minister has arrived in Beirut for his first official visit since President Trump suggested Syrian forces could help defeat Hezbollah in Lebanon. While Damascus insists it has no plans to send troops across the border, the visit comes amid growing speculation about Syria's future role in efforts to curb the Iranian-backed group and reshape the security landscape in Lebanon. And for the first time, Syria and Lebanon have joined regional security talks hosted by US Central Command. Gulf states, including Saudi Arabia, Qatar and the UAE, were also present. The talks focused on freedom of navigation through the Strait of Hormuz and what CENTCOM described as a growing commitment to shared responsibility for regional security. The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says the UN agency UNRWA is close to collapse and requires an additional $100 million in funding. The UN General Assembly held a donor conference this week to try to raise money for the agency. The US mission to the UN criticized the conference, while the ex-account of the Peace Council wrote, "The people of Gaza deserve better than this. UNRWA has no place in the new Gaza." Germany continues to invest in Israeli defence. The government's announced plans for a second site to host Israel's Arrow 3 missile defence system as it builds a multi-layered shield against ballistic missiles and other long-range threats. The Arrow 3 can intercept targets up to 100 kilometres above the Earth's surface. While France, Spain and the UK announce arms embargoes and block Israeli firms from trade fairs, Germany is making good on the $6.5 billion deal it signed with Israel last December. And Israel's tech sector is showing fresh signs of resilience despite months of regional turmoil. Israeli startups raised at least $3.3 billion in the month of June alone. That puts the country on track for one of its strongest fundraising years since the record-breaking boom of 2021. Before we get to today's conversation, a reminder, you can sponsor Israel in 10. Just drop us a line at misgavdailybrief@gmail.com. Now, here's security analyst Yaakov Lapin. I began by asking him whether Israel is safer today than it was on October the 6th, 2023.
By any objective criteria and standard, Israel is much, much safer. In fact, it's safer in a way that I think few could have imagined on October 7th. The main lessons have been translated into a new security doctrine. And it's something that the Israeli cabinet is following. It's something that the IDF general staff is promoting. Pretty much in every interface with the cabinet, they encourage the cabinet to take decisions on various security situations and dilemmas that are in line with the doctrine. And the doctrine says first of all, there has to be deep security zones around every area that would otherwise be controlled by jihadists until such time as a responsible actor can be proven, not a faith-based withdrawal, but can actually be proven to fill the vacuum and prevent jihadist armies from reforming. So we see that in Lebanon, we see that in Syria, we see that in Gaza. And the second part of this doctrine is about doing away with the concepts of deterrence, doing away with the concepts of trying to dangle economic carrots in front of jihadist actors and thinking that this can somehow change their behavior. And this is a very much a capabilities-based approach. The assumption is jihadists are going to attack when they see fit. They cannot be deterred. This is an illusion. What has to be done is to ensure that they don't have the capabilities to act on their ideology when they believe that the circumstances are in their favor. This is a very dramatic shift because deterrence was a key part of the Israeli strategy for decades, and now it's not. It's not there. Instead, we have a capabilities-based approach. It's a very, very painful lesson, I think, post-October 7th, but I see it implemented everywhere. So if we're talking about, you know, state actors, Iran, we've had two wars, preemptive wars, that were explicitly designed to prevent Iran from having a nuclear program and from having thousands of missiles. That was the goal of the second war. And on the borders, we see this doctrine being applied. It is being challenged as well. But on the whole, I think that these are the main lessons, and we're seeing Israel really, I think, stick to this doctrine to the extent where, you know, if the Americans negotiate an MOU, a memorandum of understanding that violates this doctrine, like they did with Iran, we hear very explicitly Israeli leaders saying Israel's not obligated to this. When an MOU fits well with this doctrine, which is the Israeli-Lebanese-American trilateral MOU, which fits very comfortably with the new doctrine because it legitimizes and recognizes the security zone in southern Lebanon, then we see Israel really cooperate. So I think it's very interesting to see how Israel is now navigating these diplomatic frameworks from the position of the security doctrine.
Right. And I want to apply that to Lebanon then, because there was a moment, wasn't there, when it looked as though American pressure was going to force Israel to withdraw from Lebanon and just have to accept Hezbollah on its northern borders. Are you satisfied that the equation has been changed now and is more in Israel's favor?
I, for one, was in the camp that never believed that Israel was going to withdraw from southern Lebanon in the foreseeable future. I was incredibly skeptical, Laura, that this would happen. I'm setting aside the politics of this. I think politically, any government that would do this now would be committing political suicide. And if outside observers or allies in Washington don't understand that, I don't think they understand post-October 7th Israel. But from a security perspective, it just doesn't make any sense to withdraw this quickly and allow Hezbollah to start re-entrenching itself. So from that perspective, definitely the Israeli-Lebanese MOU is a very positive development because A, it recognizes a security zone. The Lebanese government recognizes it. That's historic. And B, it stipulates very concrete criteria. So the pilot zones for the Lebanese armed forces to prove their ability to take on Hezbollah, an ability that's very much in doubt, starts at two positions far from the Israeli border. Essentially, you know, the Lebanese army and state are going to have to decide whether they're willing to fight a civil war against Hezbollah or not. That's the real decision at stake. And if they decide not to and to once again step aside, well, Israel is now fully legitimized to remain in the security zone. If by some miracle the Lebanese army starts taking on Hezbollah and winning, the first to congratulate and help and support that will be Israel. So from that perspective, it's a win-win, because it creates a diplomatic envelope of legitimacy for Israel's defensive posture in southern Lebanon. And that's an extremely positive development, in my view. The part where we may have an issue is what happens north of the security zone. What happens if Hezbollah decides that it has a zone of immunity in Dahiya, for example? That's going to be a big test. My hope is that the security doctrine trumps everything else. It has to be the prime consideration for any Israeli government.
Even above relations with the United States.
100%.
Meanwhile, the Iranians who sponsored the October 7 attacks are dragging their feet, predictably, in talks with the United States in Qatar. They're imposing all sorts of conditions. When do you think President Trump is going to run out of patience?
Oh, trying to predict what President Trump will or won't do is probably the hardest thing you know, any analyst could ever do. I was not surprised by the fact that factors like the global oil market and the midterms pushed Trump to basically do 180 on the Iranian arena. I was disappointed, but not surprised. And I think that those conditions are still very much what are influencing his decision making. So he doesn't want to go back to the war. He doesn't want to reestablish the blockade. The Iranians are very aware of that. They're pushing the envelope. They're doing their brinkmanship. You know, in a way, Trump has made the biggest mistake possible when negotiating with the Iranians, which is express a keenness to reach a deal. So they're taking full advantage, but President Trump can flip on a dime. He's done it before. He can do it again. I think it's really, Laura, it's impossible to predict. It could happen tomorrow. It could happen in a month. What I would say is that, in my view, the Israeli interest is clearly for this MOU between the United States and Iran not to develop into a quote-unquote permanent agreement. It's definitely not in our interest for that to happen, because the agreement that they're talking about has nothing to say about Iran's missile program, nothing to say about Iran's support for its terrorist proxies. It's very narrowly based on the nuclear program. And even there, there are many questions. And this is where the security doctrine comes in once again. So all the things that are neglected, in my view, terribly by this MOU, here is where Israel's insurance policy kicks in. And Israel is saying it reserves the rights to enforce its interests against these threats, whatever the MOU may have to say.
That's it. That's your Israel in 10. Thanks for watching or listening. And please do subscribe using the link below. Goodbye.